This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Bill Russell, and I are talking with Dr. Cornel West, who has done a great deal in the American thought process, if you will. You call yourself, I think, a public intellectual. You talk about this meditative strain, and in the same sentence almost, I think in the same sentence, you talk about the tragic comic. I don't think most of us think about the comic part of tragic comic. Do we have to laugh in this meditation? Is that part of what you're teaching us in this?
Very much so. Very much so. I think being able to look and laugh at oneself takes tremendous courage if it's done in a substantive manner, because it means that you're acknowledging the radical incongruities, you're acknowledging the frailties and the foibles, as you are affirming your willingness to fight, your willingness not to give up. And part of the problem, of course, of the tragic is that it's so serious that it tends to downplay the ordinariness and everydayness of our struggle. Usually tragedy is confined to the extreme situation, as in a Dostoevsky novel, or, of course, confined to the elites, as in the Greek literature or even Shakespearean plays. So geniuses like Sophocles and Shakespeare don't get to the lives of ordinary people and understand the tragic and the majestic and the problematic shot through their lives. But tragic comic, like a Chekhov, acknowledges that, lo and behold, the seriousness and the humor in everyday life requires some serious wrestling. And there's a certain kind of democratic sensibility, I think, in that concern about everyday people.
You quote, I think in several places, I think it's Ralph Ellison saying that all Americans are black, some words to that effect, which is a striking thing to say, which is probably why you quote it so regularly. But it is striking in that once you stop and think about it and follow your thinking, one follows your thinking through that. It goes to this African American century you speak of, I think. It relates us in ways that I think most people wouldn't think of. What do you mean by quoting that?
Yes. I think I mean two things. One is that most Americans cannot conceive of what it means to understand democracy and freedom without understanding the black contribution to the intellectual articulation of freedom and democracy, 14th Amendment slavery, ways in which Jim Crow had to be confronted by the incomplete American democratic regime, certain kinds of rights, certain kinds of liberties once ascribed to ex-slaves or the ex-Jim Crow, which then became applied across the board. So you got a certain conception of freedom from the enslaved people, certain conception of democracy from the victims of American democracy, Malcolm X's scientific definition of a nigger, right? And Americans take that for granted because it's become incorporated into our laws, our way of life, and so forth. And it applies to citizens across the board, from men to women to gays to lesbians to workers and so on. But at the philosophic level, which is a deeper level, taking us back to the blues and tragic sensibility, that, again, we can't understand, you know, the Richard Fords, the Russell Bankses, and others, very important figures, many towering figures, without understanding how they are so deeply enmeshed in, they're wrestling with, not imitating, emulating, romanticizing, no, they're wrestling, grappling with the black predicament. It's like no Huck Finn we know without black language, let alone Jim, you see. There's no Gatsby without talking about the clash of the races and the contrast between the green light that he sees in the next to last paragraph in that great novel, and how that juxtaposed with the red light, the stop, the immobility, the entrenchment of laboring, of tenant farmers and sharecroppers under Jim Crow, that un-American condition of immobility versus mobility. The way Gatsby can rename and recast himself and recreate himself, here these people locked in and can't, but the contrast reinforces the very, put it this way, the contrast is inseparable from the freedom that a Gatsby has, but he knows in the end he's going to have to confront it. And Fitzgerald, of course, and all of his genius acknowledges that as well.
Is definition, by virtue of what it is it definitionally? Does it have to be against the dark side? I mean, there is a you are very clear that the Marxist technology, if you will, gives us some tools in thinking about things, and mm-hmm. Hegel and Marx in their dialectic approach.
Right.
Am I hearing you say that this definition of who we are as Americans has to have the dark side for us to know what all of it is?
I think so, and I think it works at the level of just what it means to be human. You know, I mean, John Ruskin says in the fifth volume of Modern Painters of 1860 that all great art begins with a gazing without shrinking into the darkness. And I would add great living. And Art Ruskin, I think, would agree, because he understood that art is really an art of living as well as a creating artifacts. And it doesn't mean you linger in the dark. It means you have to confront it. And but to be human in America still means you have to deal with darkness, but it's a specific place, specific culture and civilization that shuns the darkness, is afraid of the darkness, you see. There's a sense in which you could only get Disneyland in America.
That's tragic. Now we're
in tragic. But of course, no one's ever died on the premises of Disneyland. There's no death in Disneyland.
No disease
in Disneyland.
Well, you bring two really important ideas to me just out of that one marvelous set of phrases. One is that in the world at this moment, at the beginning of the 21st century, America is very important.
Absolutely.
Because our popular culture has just permeated virtually every corner of the planet. And yet you also say that America comes to its position of leadership at the end of the Second War unready, unprepared,
that's
immature,
right.
and that we certainly didn't feel up to the task and maybe weren't up to the task. So again, don't you have, if America is a land of denial, which I think is undeniable, and we are immature and we're not ready and we're having this powerful impact, doesn't this have a much larger story to be told? We're not just talking about America.
No, because we are witnessing the Americanization of the world.
The good news
the
or bad news.
McDonaldization and the Coca-Colaization. But it's good and bad, because there are some good things about America. America is a democratic experiment, which, as we said before, acknowledges the dignity of the doxa of the demos, which is to say, acknowledges the dignity of the voices of everyday people. And there are the John Browns, there are the Lady Maria Childs, there are the Frederick Douglasses and W.B. Du Boises, who are all American. They are as American as a McDonald's hamburger or a Louis Sullivan skyscraper. So America is to be understood in this complex way. It's just not all negative. But the negative is very much the sentimentality, the immaturity, the materialism, the obsession with material toys, the American dream that reduces to simply prosperity and security, spectacle. Whereas the other side of America is self-respect. Negro National Anthem, lift every voice, right? The lack of democracy, voicelessness. Democracy, voices. These are very important messages for the world. Now, of course, America needs to learn that lesson as well. But in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, all around the world, democracy, when you allow the voices of working people and poor people and women and disabled gays and lesbians, you got something very powerful. So that I think that side of America, if Americanization means a democratization, then I think we're on to something very important. But that's very different than what's going on right now.
There's sort of a teleological mindset.
Teleological.
In dealing within things, in final states. And I'm reminded of one of your colleagues at Harvard, Alan Dershowitz, who wrote what to me is a charming and challenging book on the genesis of justice.
Yeah.
And he argues, and in fact, I think Paula quoted Dr. King's...
Quoting Amos
about justice rolling down like a river, and he said, I don't buy it. Justice is always an equivocal condition. It is always a struggle.
It is a process.
It is not a final condition. It is not even a destination, which is a radically different perspective than the notion that we have, as we frequently think, achieved a close approximation of nirvana.
Right.
You know,
that's
that America is A, B, C, D, all of which are wonderful.
And that everybody should
emulate it. And what I'm hearing you say, and Dershowitz's argument and the argument for democracy is an argument for constructive, ongoing engagement, including conflict,
absolutely,
between and among people.
We're going to consider that a transition. And when we come back, you can expand on absolutely. We are so pleased that Cornel West is our guest. Please be with us when we return in just a moment.